Good evening, everyone. It's time for the reading of the Arizona Daily Sun. I will be reading articles from the last couple of days. And my name is Bethany Williams. Yes, it's me again. I'm in the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'll start out just with the weather. Currently in Flagstaff, the temperature is 46 degrees. You have winds from the southwest at around 24 miles per hour under mostly cloudy skies, and it's a bit rainy, drizzly outside. Earlier today, we had a high of 47, and overnight the rain is supposed to change into snow, and the low is predicted to be 29 early morning. Rain and snow tomorrow, likely, with a 60% chance, with a high of 48. Thunder possible. Clears out in the afternoon, though. Southwest wind 14 to 16 miles per hour. Very little accumulation. Low of 28 going into Sunday, which is going to be nice and clear. And with west winds 9 to 14 miles per hour and a high of 61. A low of 33 going into Monday. All right, so the first article from the Arizona Daily Sun that I have for you is Scoop, There It Is! Serving Up Smiles in Flagstaff, and it was written by Cody Bashore, published on the website AZ Daily Sun on the 26th of April 2024. After opening in January by serving their thrifty ice cream for an event at Summit Gymnastics Academy, Scoop, There It Is, has made its debut as one of Flagstaff's newest businesses. The creation of Katie and Brian Yoskovich, Scoop, There It Is, traces its roots back more than a decade. The two knew they wanted to put together their own business, especially with Brian having some past experience through his family's farmer's market on 4th Street. Katie had originally looked to sell ice cream alongside Brian's Hatch Chili Roasting in front of the market before developing the plan into an ice cream truck. "I feel like I've always had an entrepreneur's soul," Katie said. "I have a million ideas," and I said, "let's start with one." With Brian beginning the work about 2 years ago, he set out to convert a former Snap-on truck into what now bears the name Scoop, There It Is. Acquiring the truck from a friend who was retiring from the business, Brian spent the first year figuring out just how much modification was needed to take the truck from its original purpose to serving ice cream. Though the process slowed as plans changed periodically, with Katie and Brian also selling their home in the midst of the truck's renovation, the end of 2023 brought the couple on the precipice of debuting the business. Now adorned in blue, pink, and yellow, with their logo that includes ice cream cone mountain peaks, Scoop, There It Is, was ready to serve its first round of ice cream. Sundays, shakes, and floats. "Especially with the kids at their age, they're excited about it," Brian said of the couple's own children, seeing the truck ready to operate. "It's ice cream, so why wouldn't they be? We see the joy it brings out of our kids." The jubilation quickly translated to the faces of other children who became the first customers. "We're literally serving smiles," Katie said. "You can't serve ice cream and not see a smile. Hopefully one day the kids will work in the truck and carry it on." Kids are not the only ones who are happy at the sight of a scoop filled with thrifty flavors such as chocolate malted crunch, birthday cake, or strawberry cheesecake. For Katie and Brian, the Thrifty brand of ice cream, well known around California, is special because it was shared between the two on their first date. From our first date to scooping it with our baby on his little bouncer seat outside the chili roaster in the market, Katie said, a lot of people are like, it's just ice cream. And I'm like, no, there's different tastes to different things, and Thrifty has a little different feel to it. Katie and Brian already upped their capacity to 12 different flavors from the 8 they opened with. They plan to keep the most popular 4 options in the truck while others will rotate, with varieties added to the menu as necessary by the season. For those familiar with Thrifty over the years, the two have a way for customers to embrace the nostalgia related to the brand, in addition to also offering their hand-mixed shakes, sundaes, and ice cream cookie sandwiches. We got some other ideas with some colder weather stuff and how we can mix the two together, like a warm cup of something with ice cream, Brian said. Expanding out, other than scooping ice cream, we're also kind of broadening that out and making it bigger. With events at Summit Gymnastics and Jay Lively Activity Center completed in their first few months of operation, Katie and Brian are looking forward to attending other events such as weddings and birthday parties. Now that the weather has warmed, the truck will pop up around town, or even locations across the entire region such as the Grand Canyon, Cottonwood, and Prescott. Following Scoop There It Is on Facebook and Instagram, like at instagram.com/scooptthereitisflg, will be the best way to be in the know about their schedule. While Thrifty originates from California, Scoop There It Is plans to work with Joy-Cone in order to keep everything else in the truck as local as possible, a testament to the connection Katie and Brian feel with many others around the city. Holding a pre-existing relationship with Threes in the Trees, through Brian's past with the farmers market, Augie Herring and Rusty Montoya offered assistance through their commissary kitchen by storing more of the product. Flagstaff thrives on local small business, and we all support one another with word of mouth, Katie said. That was Scoop There It Is Serves Up Smiles. Trial begins for Anthony Jose Martinez in 2020 death of 6-year-old. This was published in the print edition of the newspaper yesterday, the 25th of April, 2024. And by Cody Bashore again. More than 4 years after his arrest for first-degree murder, child abuse, kidnapping, and aggravated assault against an officer, Anthony Jose Martinez's trial began Tuesday morning in Coconino County Superior Court. Along with Elizabeth Archibacue, the mother of the children, and Anne Marie Martinez, the children's grandmother, Martinez is accused of locking his 2 sons in a bedroom closet for 16 hours a day while limiting their food and withholding them from school. Martinez's 6-year-old son died due to starvation on March 2, 2020, while the 7-year-old son was transferred to a children's hospital in the valley where he remained for 2.5 weeks for treatment. Jury selection concluded Friday, after more than a day and a half was needed to compile an 18-person box. The extended process left opening statements to begin on Tuesday morning with Daniel Noble, an attorney for Coconino County, breaking down the prosecution's case. Noble described the closet the boys were confined to as measuring 21 by 25 inches, filled with boxes and piles of clothes, including an orange plastic sheet that was wet and smelled of urine. He said the 2 other children in the home were allowed to sleep wherever they wanted, within the room, and the grandmother occupied the other bedroom of the apartment. Martinez told police that the boys, who were given oatmeal and bread for breakfast and lunch, had stolen food at night and gotten into diet pills weeks earlier, resulting in them being placed in the closet at 8 p.m. each night, and allowed out at noon. Noble's opening statements noted that Martinez would stay up throughout the night playing video games and sitting in a chair right next to the closet to ensure the boys did not get out. When police arrived for the call of an unresponsive 6-year-old, the boy's jaw was clenched and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation was impossible, as rigor mortis had already begun. Medics at the scene determined the boy had been dead for some time. Police also spoke to the 7-year-old, who explained he was hungry, but became tired and sluggish after eating some food he was provided and needed to be transported for treatment as he started to vomit. Noble's opening statements described this as evidence of refeeding syndrome, with the body's chemistry shifting dramatically following a period of being malnourished. The 7-year-old weighed just 28 pounds when police arrived, considered the weight of a 2-year-old child, and improved to the weight of a 4-year-old after 2.5 weeks in the hospital. The 6-year-old victim weighed just 18 pounds at the time of his death, with the 4-year-old child in the home weighing 38 pounds and the 2-year-old 24 pounds. Citing the apartment being filled with food, from cake and pancake mixes, cereal and cookies in the pantry, to eggs, bags of smoothie blends, ice cream, and frozen meat, Noble explained how much better the treatment of the 2 younger children was than the older boys. This extended to their absence from school due to an alleged lack of vaccination records, a detail the prosecution planned to address during the trial. With starvation listed as the cause of death, the 6-year-old victim was noted as having organs that were small for his age, little food in his stomach at the time of his death, and being dehydrated. To conclude his opening statement, Noble showed the jury a picture of the 6-year-old boy's body at the time of his death and explained the evidence provided during the trial would prove Martinez's guilt. After you hear all the evidence in this case, I am going to ask that you hold the defendant accountable by finding him guilty as to all counts, Noble said. Halted by a pair of objections from the prosecution regarding the direction they were headed in, the defense's opening statement from attorney Taylor Fox focused on Martinez's childhood, leading him to his relationship with Archibecue that began while he was just 15 years old and she was 18. Fox explained that the jury would learn more about the 2 figures that altered the life of Martinez, who turns 28 this month, during the trial. The first, his father, left him with a tendency to withdraw from a source of terror. The second, Archibecue, took advantage of his ways of life that were learned in childhood. The second one came later in Anthony's life. This second person would take full advantage of his instincts, Fox said. With the 2 eldest children born before Martinez turned 18 years old, Fox's opening statement positioned Archibecue as the person who formed the structure of their relationship. Calling Archibecue deceptive, manipulative, and cunning, Fox explained that Martinez deferred to her. He said Martinez moved to Iowa in 2014 to live with Archibecue's relatives, but returned roughly a year later when Archibecue no longer wanted him there. After returning to Arizona, Martinez then shifted back to Iowa when Archibecue asked him to assist with her pregnancy of another child from a different father. Ultimately, they returned to Arizona in 2019 and first lived with Martinez's sister, shifting to live in their van at night, and with Martinez's mother during the day. The family ended up moving into the grandmother's apartment full-time after the van broke down in the winter. When a person both loves and fears the most powerful person in their life, which Archibecue certainly was and remained in his adult years, what does that person do when she becomes a threat to your children? Fox said. Fox explained Martinez returned to the actions of his childhood by withdrawing and retreating from the situation. Describing Martinez's time playing video games as his opportunity to feel powerful and distance himself from Archibecue's treatment of the children, Fox said the defendant continued to hide from the realities of the situation while listening to her directions. Basing this as the evidence, he did not intentionally or knowingly starve the children. Fox said Martinez's case is about that control from Archibecue rather than what he should have done. Once the jury departed for the morning recess, the state explained on the record the grounds for the objections that led to more than 16 minutes of bench conferences. As the defense began to explain a doctor's interactions with Martinez, leading to the determination of the 2 factors that led him to this point in his life, the prosecution said it appeared as though specific references to childhood trauma suffered by his father we're going to be noted. With these examples cited as opinions of the doctor, as opposed to any diagnosed condition, Superior Court Judge Ted Reed said the objections were sustained. Martinez's trial is scheduled through May 24th, with proceedings taking place on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. While Archibucu is already serving a life sentence that began in July of 2023, Anne Marie Martinez is scheduled to begin her trial in August. That was Trial Begins for Anthony Jose Martinez. FUSD to switch school schedules between district elementary and secondary schools. This is by Abigail Kessler and was published in Thursday's print edition. The Flagstaff Unified School District will be switching its arrival and dismissal times for elementary and secondary schools starting with the 2025-26 school year. The district's current school schedule has elementary students both starting and ending the school day later than those in middle and high school. Though FUSD has not yet finalized the arrival and dismissal times for after this change, this will now be flipped, starting in August of 2025. During Thursday's FUSD board meeting, Superintendent Michael Penka explained that this is a change the district has been considering for over a decade. A calendar committee comprised of employees from several departments, as a subset of the negotiations committee, as well as parents, met monthly between October and March to discuss the change. After a vote from the calendar committee, the proposal was brought to the negotiations committee, which unanimously supported it. "We felt like it was important to not just keep kicking the can down the road," Penka said. "This has been talked about in this district for over 10 years, and because this is difficult work, and it's somewhat polarizing, it has always been tabled in the past. People making the recommendations now felt really compelled about working through the difficulties and doing what's right, what we believe is best for adolescent learners, and we think a side benefit might be improved attendance and learning outcomes." The idea for a later secondary start time, Penka said, comes in response to research that shows that sometime between 8:30 and 9 for a start time is the most ideal for adolescents, with benefits to their focus, mental well-being, learning, achievement, and school attendance. In the current school year, the district's elementary schools run from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. during full days, except Puente de Hoyo and Loop, while its middle school runs from 7:50 a.m. to 2:20, and its high schools run from 8 a.m. to 2:30, except for Summit. Though the new times are not finalized yet, the intent is to move elementary school start times earlier and shift middle and high school starts later. Penka cited other districts and states moving their secondary start times later, including both California and Florida, and that a member of the advisory committee is both a district parent and a psychiatrist. "The research showed that our adolescents, their natural sleep cycle is pushed back, so they tend to stay up later and sleep in later," he said. "And that's different than what it is for our younger children." Potential negative impacts he listed include that it could affect after-school activities, childcare, transportation, and staff schedules. Penka said this was part of the reason the change would not take effect until 2025. The district is planning to use additional committees to develop a response to these issues by December, which is when it plans to communicate finalized school schedules to families. "We know the change has challenges to it, but we want to know what's right for the safety and well-being of our students first," he said. "If we have more time, we can iron out all these challenges we have." A survey of district families and staff found a nearly even split between strong support and strong opposition to the change, Penka said, with slightly more people in support. In all, there were about 500 responses from district staff, 1,400 from families. One family made public comment about the switch at the board meeting, asking that FUSD not change the school schedules. Ben Brown and daughters Elizabeth and Julie Brown said the later secondary start and end time would conflict with students' commitments outside of school, leaving them less time to sleep and making transportation more difficult. The facts are that a lot of our learning opportunities don't just happen at school, and those learning opportunities help our young people grow into well-rounded members of our society. Ben said, please don't let school interfere with learning. Elizabeth, who attends Coconino High School, said she attends seminary before school and works part-time and takes Chinese lessons after school. The after-school commitments will be more difficult to schedule should the school times change, she said, while her morning class means she will still need to wake up early. Julie is a student at Mount Eldon Middle School and used her after-school dance lessons as an example of how the changes would affect her. With the current dismissal time, she has about 15 minutes between walking home after school and leaving for dance, which she said is when she does most of her homework. Moving to a later secondary schedule would mean she no longer has that time. It's important not only to me, but to many responsible students as well, that you not change the school schedule for next year, Elizabeth said. The board did not vote to approve the change. As President Christine Frederick said, school schedules are determined by the superintendent, while the board makes decisions about the overall academic calendar. I know there's just a lot of things that need to be balanced, said board member Carol Gilmore. I think if we look at this throughout the period, not just, oh, it's going to happen in a year, that will help everybody to say, we've looked at this portion, we looked at this portion, and keep information coming. A recording of the meeting is available at vimeo.com/FUSD1. With discussion of the schedule change beginning at around 1 hour 10 minutes. That was FUSD to switch school schedules between elementary and secondary schools. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun. Our website is sunsounds.org, where you can listen to our live streams, find individual episodes on demand, and find out how to support us. Next up, Coconuts joins first Robotics Hall of Fame after World Championship Award win by Daily Sun staff, published at the azdailysun.com on the 26th. Coconino High School's robotics team, the Coconuts, entered the first Robotics Hall of Fame last week after winning the Impact Award at the 2024 World Championship. The first World Championship took place April 17th through 20th. In Houston, and had more than 1,000 teams representing 58 countries. The Coconuts was one of 18 teams that pre-qualified for Worlds for the first time in the team's history after winning the Engineering Inspiration Award at the 2023 World Championship. Flagstaff Unified School District's announcement noted the Coconuts are one of 38 first robotics teams to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. The FIRST Impact Award is the apex of recognition within the FIRST Robotics Competition, celebrating teams that exhibit sustained excellence and influence both within the community and their regions, according to the district announcement. It applauds teams that act as role models, extending their reach beyond the realm of robotics to mentor and shape the influencers of tomorrow. The Coconuts earned the award in recognition of their advocacy for STEM education both in Arizona and across the United States, as well as their ResBotics program, which helps start and mentor new robotics teams across the Navajo Nation. ResBotics started in the summer of 2023 in partnership with Navajo Transitional Energy Company, which sponsored 12 new robotics teams at the start of the school year. The Coconuts have been helping to start and support those teams throughout the school year and led the first Indigenous Robotics Competition, a regional qualifier held at Diné College in January. In January, coach Dave Thompson said they hoped to continue adding at least 15 teams a year until robotics is available at every chapter house across the Navajo Nation. An estimated 120 new teams over the next 5 to 10 years. This will be done through developing new teams into experts that can mentor others. The coconuts exemplify the pinnacle of First's vision, turning a passion for STEM into tangible success, and fostering a community spirit that transcends the competition arena, the announcement said. And that was Coconuts Join First Robotics Hall of Fame After World Championship Award Win. Published in Thursday's print edition by Daily Sun staff, Basis finishes fourth at National High School Ethics Bowl. A team of students from Basis Flagstaff traveled to Chapel Hill, North Carolina recently for the National High School Ethics Bowl. The team included seniors Sedona O'Hearn and Delaney Funk, juniors Olivia Beezer, Cindy Huang, and team captain Mae Bradford, as well as alternates senior Nathaniel Carlton and freshman Juliana Miliati. Basis Flagstaff was the only Arizona school to make the national championship this year and came in fourth place in the country by the end of the competition. These students, aided with the help of NAU's philosophy department and especially Professor Julie Peering, were phenomenal, wrote teacher and coach Luke Calhoun. Their ability to edge out teams, often from large, wealthy schools and Ivy League feeders, in finding ethical nuances and explaining their thoughts was downright inspiring. He added, "Even more impressive were the intangibles. Outside of competition, they demonstrated hard work, kindness, empathy, collaboration, complex critical thinking, and integrity. They were not only a team that won match after match, but a team you truly wanted to root for." Basis Flagstaff's team made it to the Final Four of the competition, beating both Princeton High School and the eventual winner in early rounds before losing 2-1 to Harvard Westlake of L.A. I'm not sure whether that's L.A. like Los Angeles or L.A. for the state of Louisiana. Calhoun was also shortlisted for Coach of the Year. Students from 24 schools across the country competed in the Ethics Bowl April 12th through 14th, hosted by the UNC Parr Center for Ethics. These schools qualified from among 400 participating in regional and divisional competitions by both winning a regional championship and winning a one-on-one match against another regional winner. This year's regional championship was at Northern Arizona University and led by Peering, associate professor and philosophy department chair. In the national championship, the teams responded to a set of 15 cases on ethics-related topics ranging from zoos to space burials to celebrity gossip. Student teams defended their actual position on the topic rather than being assigned to opposing views. Two teams discussed a moral question related to a case study in a 5-period match, with teams presenting their response to the question, followed by commentary from the other team, and then their response. At the end, the judges score teams on presentation, commentary, respectful dialogue, and response to both the commentary and questions from the judges. The National High School Ethics Bowl inspires and challenges high school students across the country to develop their ethical reasoning skills and engage in productive dialogue about complex ethical issues, the announcement said. These students are spread geographically across 34 states and demographically hail from all walks of life, but are doing the hard work of thinking, talking, and working together on tough moral issues that define our times. More information is available at NHSEB, I guess that stands for National High School Ethics Bowl, nhseb.org/championship. That was Basis finishes fourth at High School Ethics Bowl. Coconino County supports new license agreement with Fort Tuthill Military Museum. This is by Cody Bashore and was published at azdailysun.com on the 26th. During its April 23rd meeting, the Coconino County Board of Supervisors approved a license agreement with the Fort Tuthill Military Museum. The agreement allows the museum to use two county buildings and specific outdoor space at no expense on the quad of Fort Tuthill County Park. The agreement will last for 5 years, beginning this month, with three additional 5-year renewal options. The partnership between Coconino County and the Fort Tuthill Military Museum has been long-standing, with a license agreement signed between the two in 2012 to use the property for historical interpretation and to display military artifacts for the public. The museum's displays include items related to the 158th Infantry Regiment, the 158th Regimental Combat Team, and the current 1st Battalion 158th Infantry Arizona National Guard. Open during the summer and during major events, the museum is the only available entity that holds exhibits of the kind in the Flagstaff area. The Fort Tuthill Military Museum has long been a partner with the county to do interpretation of Fort Tuthill, as it was an Arizona National Guard training center and the Bushmaster Squadron, said Liz Krug, Assistant Director for Coconino County Parks and Recreation. They're a nonprofit with a board of directors that's just really committed to really bringing the interpretation gap that we have here at Fort Tuthill County Park. We really rely heavily on them for that particular service. Vice Chair of the Board and District 4 Supervisor Judy Begay encouraged the public to visit the museum given the historical significance of the military artifacts on display and its connection to the park's history. The license agreement references the museum's mission that fits with the Coconino County Master Plan due to its efforts to connect underserved youth and adults to lifelong learning through recreational programming, enhance program delivery at Fort Tuthill, and build volunteer programs. I want to make a note for the record of the important historical basis it provides, the unique basis it provides for our community, and the wonderful outreach to our public on this, said District 1 Supervisor Patrice Horseman. I certainly find that it is of a public purpose and public benefit to allow a waiver of any expenses. That was the article, Coconino County Supports New License Agreement with Fort Tuthill Military Museum. David Cook, to remain on LD7 Senate ballot for primary after Wendy Rogers' challenge denied. Also by Cody Bashore, and this was published on the 25th. Republican State Senator Wendy Rogers' attempt to have Republican State Representative David Cook removed from July's primary ballot was denied by a Maricopa County Superior Court judge on Wednesday. Rogers filed the claim on April 15th, the deadline for candidate challenges, alleging some of Cook's signatures were invalid. Timothy Lasota represented Rogers in the case, the same attorney who defended Carrie Lake and Abe Hamada in their claims against the 2022 election for governor and attorney general, respectively. Cook, currently serving as LD7's representative, is challenging Rogers, the incumbent state senator in LD7, as he reaches a term limit in the House of Representatives. Maricopa County Superior Court Judge John Blanchard did disqualify some of Cook's signatures, according to KJAZ reporter Cameron Sanchez, but not enough to have him removed from the ballot. Since her first election in 2020, Rogers, who represents Flagstaff, has dominated her primaries and general elections. Running for Arizona Senate representing LD6 in 2020, Rogers defeated incumbent Sylvia Allen 59.2% to 40.8%, and went on to receive 54.7% of the vote over Democrat Felicia French. Shifting to LD7 in 2022, Rogers defeated Kelly Townsend with 59.7% of the vote in the primary, and Democrat Kyle Nitschke with 63.6% of the vote. Cook, who is from Globe, finished first in the general election for LD8 in 2016, 18, and 20, as Republicans swept the two seats for each race. Shifting to LD7 for his final House of Representatives election in 22, Cook once again finished atop the race in the general election. He announced he would challenge Rogers for the Republican nomination in July of 2023. Within a couple of hours of the decision on Wednesday night, Rogers tweeted that poorly managed toddlers are running elections. Arizona's 7th legislative district includes parts of Coconino, Gila, Navajo, and Pinal counties, stretching from Flagstaff to areas southeast of Phoenix. The winner of the July 30th Republican primary will face the winner of the Democratic primary between Roberto Apodaca Reveles and Haley Creighton in November's general election. That was David Cook to remain on LD7 Senate ballot for primary. By Daily Sun staff, Northern Arizona University partners with San Carlos Apache College. This was published on the website on the 24th. Northern Arizona University, NAU, announced a new partnership with San Carlos Apache College, SCAC, on Tuesday, a move meant to further the opportunities both institutions offer Native American students. The two signed on Monday, April 15th, an intergovernmental agreement, which an announcement said would strengthen collaborative opportunities at all levels between the two institutions, including for academic, programming, faculty collaboration, student success initiatives, and transfer and graduate education pathways. It noted a similar agreement that started in 2016 between NAU and Diné College. The university also began the Arizona Attainment Alliance in 2022 in partnership with community colleges statewide. This historic agreement between NAU and SCAC is a powerful vehicle for our two institutions to collaborate successfully and in truly innovative and culturally respectful ways, in providing the best educational opportunities possible for the Native students and communities we serve, said SCAC President Martin Ahumada in the announcement on the partnership. I'm looking forward to the continued pursuit and fulfillment of our agreement's noble purpose and unlimited potential to help forge a bright future for our Native students. Marcus Mactima is an assistant professor in NAU's Department of History, and he is the first and only member of the San Carlos Apache tribe to earn a PhD in history. According to the announcement, the partnership is meant to encourage opportunities such as Mactima's work teaching Apache and other Native history courses both at NAU and SCAC. This partnership opens up the possibility for the construction of new educational pathways between SCAC and NAU, Mactima said. As a faculty member at both institutions, I've witnessed the highest level of student engagement in academic studies at SCAC, and the possibility for that resiliency to be continued and fostered at NAU. I'm hopeful I might be able to assist in developing program tracks that bring students from SCAC to NAU, and perhaps graduate them to become historians who wish to preserve our people's history. That was Northern Arizona University partners with San Carlos Apache College. And by Daily Sun staff, published in the April 25th print edition, Spring Burns, Spring Prescribed Burns on Kaibab National Forest. Fire managers are planning to conduct prescribed fires throughout the spring season, as conditions allow, on the Kaibab National Forest. With the goal of treating up to 8,600 total acres this spring, crews plan to begin ignitions in the coming weeks. In the Williams Ranger District, the Three Sisters RX is located on the north shore of Kaibab Lake, approximately 1.5 miles northeast of the city of Williams. Martine East RX is located west of Pumpkin Center Road, approximately 12 miles north of the community of Parks. In the Tusayan Ranger District, the Blue Stem RX is located east of Forest Road 311, approximately 16 miles east-southeast of the town of Tusayan. Russell Tank will be inaccessible, and approximately 4.5 miles of the Arizona Trail will be rerouted around the perimeter of the burn. On the North Kaibab Ranger District, Billy Sink Phase 2 RX is located along a quarter of a mile south of Jacob Lake along the east side of Route 67. Grand Canyon National Park also plans on conducting the 50-acre Bright Angel RX on the north rim near the developed area. Exact ignition dates are unknown, as burning will be dependent upon daily agency administrator approval and conditions within the ranges outlined in each prescribed fire plan. You're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun program on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing you audio access to print information for over 40 years. You can now download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for both Apple and Android at the respective smartphone app stores. You can use the app to listen to Sun Sounds live and to listen to on-demand episodes. Also from the Thursday print edition, Flagstaff Mayor Daggett endorses Ruben Gallego for Senate seat. Flagstaff Mayor Becky Daggett on Tuesday endorsed Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego in his bid for the U.S. Senate. Gallego, who currently represents Arizona's 3rd Congressional District, is vying with Republican Carrie Lake for the seat occupied by Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Although the office of Flagstaff Mayor is nonpartisan, Daggett cited Gallego's work securing money for infrastructure, broadband internet, and sustainability as key factors in her endorsement. With him in office, Flagstaff will be adding a leader who will work tirelessly to help us address housing affordability, cost of living, wildfire management, and more. He's earned my support and trust to be our next senator, and I urge everyone to join me in supporting him, Daggett said in a statement. Daggett is not the only city official to have endorsed Gallego. The mayors of Phoenix, Tucson, Tempe, and Tolleson have all also endorsed the Democratic candidate. I'm honored to have Mayor Daggett's support in this crucial race. Her work on behalf of Flagstaff and dedication to tackling critical issues, including workforce development, housing supply, fighting the threat of forest fires, and securing our collective water future, reflect the kind of collaborative, forward-thinking leadership that we need across our state, Gallego said in a statement. Throughout her time as mayor, we've worked closely on infrastructure projects and ways to combat flooding and wildfires. I'm looking forward to continuing our partnership as Arizona's next U.S. Senator. Like Gallego, Daggett's name will also be listed on the local ballot in November as she seeks a second term as mayor. She's running unopposed. That was Mayor Daggett endorses Ruben Gallego for Senate. Flagstaff chef named James Beard semifinalist by Zachary Markowitz in a special to the Daily Sun. Sam Greenhog, chef and owner of Forêt, FLG, and Petit Marché, understands how frustrating it can be to have a great experience at a restaurant, only to go again and have the food not taste the same. That's why, Greenhog said, his and his staff's specialty is consistency. And this article, by the way, I forgot to mention, it was also published in Thursday's print edition. Greenhalgh was nominated as a James Beard Award semifinalist for Best Chef Southwest. The award is considered one of the highest achievements a chef can attain. While it was recently announced he did not move on to the finalist stage, Greenhalgh said he's not disappointed. He said a James Beard nomination is the only accolade he's seen as a goal because of how difficult it is to get nominated, especially as a newcomer. People put JBF on their tag even if they've never won one, Greenhalgh said. They're a James Beard finalist for the rest of their lives. People use James Beard semifinalists for the rest of their lives. It's a big deal. Foray has been open now in downtown Flagstaff for nearly 3 years. It's spelled F-O-R-E-T with a hat over the E. And conceivably behind Greenhalgh's quick nomination is his pursuit of consistency, which can explain nearly all parts of how he runs his business. The restaurant is closed Mondays and Tuesdays and open 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. the rest of the week. According to Greenhalgh, that decision is to ensure the staff can reliably serve customers, even under the less-than-ideal circumstances that fast-paced restaurant work is known for. Wait times at Foray can sometimes be long, and while this is partly because of a small kitchen that can only fit two cooks for the 300 customers the restaurant can serve, it's also because Greenhalgh values consistency and quality over time. He takes particular pride in the classic French omelette Foray serves, which requires intense focus and can be ruined if the cook takes their eyes off for even 10 seconds, he said. It's a lot easier to sell an omelette that's a little bit overcooked, with a little bit of color that's a little cracked, to move on to the next thing, Greenhalgh said, but you just can't do that. Everyone's a VIP. Every single item's a VIP. However, consistency does not mean stagnation. To Greenhalgh, constantly improving is part of what it takes to give customers the best possible experience. Over time, Greenhalgh's businesses have started to operate based on employees' and customers' ideas to improve them. If we're going to change something, we change it across the board, Greenhalgh said. But I've learned better ways of doing almost everything from my employees in this space. Greenhalgh always knew owning a restaurant was the end goal, and now that he's here, he said he takes every day of work seriously. Since Foray opened, he said, the standard has been to work with intention, even past the hours he knew he could be paid for. He said getting to this point was a result of keeping his head down for a long time, trying to improve constantly and learn from chefs who knew more than him. I always tried to be the worst line cook in every kitchen I worked, Greenhalgh said. If you're not the worst line cook, then you should find a job where you are, because that's where you learn. Greenhalgh intends to focus on the day-to-day operations of Foray and Petit Marché to make them as successful as they can be. However, he says he intends to stay on the lookout for more restaurant opportunities. And that was Flagstaff chef and restaurant owner named James Beard semifinalist. From Susan Montoya Bryan of the Associated Press, Native American tribes want U.S. appeals court to weigh in on $10 billion SunZia energy transmission project. This was published at azdailysun.com on the 26th of April. Native American tribes and environmentalists want a U.S. appeals court to weigh in on their request to halt construction along part of a $10 billion transmission line that will carry wind-generated electricity from New Mexico to customers as far away as California. The disputed stretch of the SunZia transmission line is in southern Arizona's San Pedro Valley. The tribes and others argue that the U.S. Interior Department and Bureau of Land Management failed to recognize the cultural significance of the area before approving the route of the massive project in 2015. SunZia is among the projects that supporters say will bolster President Joe Biden's agenda for cutting greenhouse gas emissions. The planned 550-mile, or 885-kilometer, conduit would carry more than 3,500 megawatts of wind power to 3 million people. A U.S. district judge rejected earlier efforts to stall the work while the merits of the case play out in court, but the tribes and other plaintiffs opted Wednesday to ask the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to intervene. The Tohono O'odham Nation has vowed to pursue all legal avenues for protecting land it considers sacred. Tribal Chairman Verlin Jose, said in a recent statement that he wants to hold the federal government accountable for violating historic preservation laws that are designed specifically to protect such lands. He called it too important of an issue, saying, "The United States renewable energy policy that includes destroying sacred and undeveloped landscapes is fundamentally wrong and must stop." The Tohono O'odham, along with the San Carlos Apache tribe, the Center for Biological Diversity and Archaeology Southwest, sued in January, seeking a preliminary injunction to stop the clearing of roads and paths so more work could be done to identify culturally significant sites within a 50-mile stretch of the valley. Attorneys for the plaintiffs have alleged in court documents and in arguments made during a March hearing that the federal government was stringing the tribes along, promising to meet requirements of the National Historic Preservation Act after already making a final decision on the route. The motion, filed Wednesday, argues that the federal government has legal and distinct obligations under the National Historic Preservation Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, and that the Bureau of Land Management's interpretation of how its obligations apply to the SunZia project should be reviewed by the appeals court. California-based developer Pattern Energy has argued that stopping work would be catastrophic, with any delay compromising the company's ability to get electricity to customers as promised in 2026. In denying the earlier motion for an injunction, U.S. Judge Jennifer Zips had ruled that the plaintiffs were years too late in bringing their claims, and the Bureau of Land Management had fulfilled its obligations to identify historic sites and prepare an inventory of cultural resources. Still, she also acknowledged the significance of the San Pedro Valley for the tribes after hearing testimony from experts. That was Native American Tribes Want U.S. Appeals Court to Weigh In on SunZia Energy Project. With just a few minutes left in the program, I will read a sports article that was published in Thursday's print edition. Flagstaff Tennis beats Eastmark, earning first state tourney win in 11 years and continuing undefeated season. By Eric Newman, Sun Sports editor. Flagstaff's magical tennis season will continue for at least one more match. The fourth-seeded Eagles, who finished the regular season undefeated for the first time in team history, defeated number 13 Eastmark Tuesday in the first round of the Division II state tournament at Thorpe Park, 8-1. The victory is Flagstaff's first in the state tournament since 2013, when it swept Campo Verde. Since the beginning of the season, getting to this point was the objective for the Eagles, who now sit at 15-0, 7-0 in the section. That was one of our goals, to focus on getting every match and try to get to the end. We've won some big matches over these few months now, and to have a home match was great. And to get a win is even more special, Eagles coach Steve Broadway said. The girls bought into our philosophy, and they're working hard to get better. We're looking to keep going now. Flagstaff blazed through the top four singles matches. Freshman Autumn Didovic won 6-0 and 6-1 on court two. She was followed quickly by her sister, sophomore Annika Dydovic, who earned a 6-3, 6-2 win at the number one spot. Junior Anna Drinan won 6-1, 6-1 on court three, and junior Caitlin Barr's 6-3, 6-3 victory put the Eagles up 4-0, needing just one more win to secure the victory. Drinan and Annika Dydovic made quick work of the first doubles court, winning 8-2 to push the Eagles over the line and clinch. Shortly after, junior Ileana Muscarella won 6-0, 6-3 on singles court 5. Junior Josie Schinkel had the toughest singles match of the day on court 6, splitting the first two sets. She won the third set tiebreaker to emerge with a 6-1, 3-6, 10-7 victory as the Eagles swept the singles matches. Autumn Dydovic and Caitlin Barr rolled to an 8-4 win on the second doubles court. The lone loss came from freshmen Sophie Harmon and Muscarella, who fell 8-5 in the third doubles position. Just a season removed from an unceremonious first-round exit, Flagstaff was ranked number 15 in 2023 and was ousted 6-0 by Arizona College Prep in the tournament, a dominant victory with a massive turnaround. "This year has been really bonding compared to last season," Annika Dydovic said. "We've all been getting together and doing stuff on the side. That definitely helps the team's chemistry. We've been practicing 6 days per week, and some of us come Sundays, too. The commitment is very good." Broadway believes the team, even without any seniors in the starting roster, has been motivated by seasons past to do as well as possible this year. "We got smoked by those schools, and the girls saw that," he said. "I have all those kids still. They felt that and knew what it took to get to that next level, and wanted to be there. I don't know that I expected a specific record, but I expected they would put in the effort and have some success. They put the time in, training in the summer, doing USTA tournaments, all of that to keep getting better." Now, with the first round out of the way, Flagstaff will host a quarterfinal match next Tuesday against fifth-seeded Canyon Del Oro at 3 p.m. "I think we're going to do pretty good. I'm hoping we make it to the finals. That would be awesome. That would be insane, but I think we have a chance," Annika Dydovic said. That was Flagstaff Tennis Beats Eastmark, continuing undefeated season. You've been listening to the Arizona Daily Sun program from the Flagstaff studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Thanks for listening, and have a good night.